Case number 08-1067, Alvin Liu Media, Inc., Appellant versus Federal Communications Commission. Mr. Kelly for the appellant, Mr. Pash for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Dennis Kelly and I'm appearing here today on behalf of Alvin Liu Media, Inc. And I would request leave of the court for 3 minutes of rebuttal time. Alvin Liu appeals the dismissal of its construction permit application at Spring Valley, Nevada by the Federal Communications Commission and requests a reversal of the or vacation of the orders below and requests also an order that the Federal Communications Commission reinstate Alvin Liu's application and allow it to file a so-called long-form application for the Spring Valley frequency. The reason we're here today is because of the procedures that the commission used, and it's at the time, and this case goes back to the year 2000, this was a newfangled procedure at the commission. Replacing the former comparative broadcast hearings, which this court essentially struck down in the Bechtel case in December of 1993. And what the commission instructed the parties such as my client and Powell Meredith Communications Company to submit a two-part application. One is a so-called Form 159 auction application, and then a short form FCC 301 application, which stated the applicant's technical proposal. The problem in our case is that Powell Meredith submitted a proposal that could never be implemented. It proposed a one-tower, non-directional, 10,000-watt daytime and nighttime application, which on its face would cause destructive interference to two radio stations at night, one in San Jose, California, one in Mexicali, Mexico.
What do you mean on its face?
Well, Your Honor,
somebody would have to look at the application, right?
Yeah, if somebody who was experienced in a lawyer or an engineer who does these cases, and those are the people that review these applications at the FCC, were to look at this application, it's for 1590, which is a so-called regional frequency, and historically, until just a few years, I'm sorry.
Your argument that in order to make a mutual exclusivity determination, the engineer or the expert staff person would necessarily notice?
I think they would. If they were experts in the field, and everyone that works at the FCC in this type of capacity is, they would have noticed on its face that the Powell Meredith application could not be implemented because it was for a regional channel. Historically, the maximum power on that channel was for 5,000 watts, and to operate at night, a station would have to generally have a directional antenna system. In other words, you have 2, 3, 4, 5 towers that suppress the signal in some directions and send it out in other directions.
So the commission has said, as I understand it, we heard comments along this line when we were thinking about these procedures. And we balanced sort of the direction Congress gave us to expedite these proceedings. And we've come up with a scheme that we're satisfied, that satisfies us that we're complying with the congressional direction. And we're willing to take this risk that somebody may come through the auction and then we'll have to sanction them after the fact.
I would make two comments to that, Your Honor. First, there is a line of cases at the commission, the Goodman-Todson case, the Martin Lake Broadcasting case.
Those are comparative hearing cases.
Well, they were in those cases. The commission ruled that in order to qualify to be considered on Section 307B grounds, which is always the first step before you got to the former standard comparative issue, you had to be technically qualified. So in other words, if you made a technical proposal which violated the rules or treaties, you would be dismissed and you would not be entitled to Section 307B comparison. And that's as we submit, is the situation with Powell Meredith.
You're saying that when the commission, in adopting its procedures, said we're going to stick with our 307B procedures, that necessarily they committed themselves to doing that type of technical review prior to the auction?
Yes, I believe they had to be consistent with Section 307B. I think that, well, I don't know what went into the thinking behind the order, but...
Well, I'm referring to language that's in the rulemaking order itself. I'm not looking into anybody's mind.
Yes.
You're referring to consistency with 307B as it was understood before Bechtel.
But Bechtel actually did not involve Section 307B. It dealt with the so-called standard comparative issue, which is the second, in the old days, was the second phase of a hearing. If you couldn't make a decision on Section 307B grounds, you then moved to the standard comparative issue grounds.
That's gone.
But the Section 307B determination remains.
And what the commission seems to have done in its rulemaking is to have said, we understand the stakes here in terms of having a preview or post hoc view of this qualification issue, this threshold issue. But we're going to let the applicants self-certify. And there's a penalty if they're wrong.
Unhappily, clients in the posture of my client would suffer the penalty also, because there really is no remedy that is availing to us, in the sense that if my client had participated in the so-called cash bid auction,
what would happen?
And if he had made a bid and then was outbid by the other side under a later ruling of the commission, now this assumes that the Powell application was dismissed at some point down the road and not granted, we would not have had the right to come in and be the successful bidder or have our application considered. We would have just been out.
Wait a second. So the second highest bidder doesn't succeed if
that's
the first
correct.
Highest bidder is eliminated?
Yes, that's the so-called waiver of Section 1.2109 case that we cite in our brief.
So
but
instead,
there's
a
footnote in the commission's brief that disputes that. The commission's brief says you say it's either or, and they say no, there's a third option.
I'm not sure what that third option would be, Your Honor. And all
the third option is it could go to the second.
But I guess what I'm saying is that in this 2007 case, the commission said that it would not allow the second place bidder to become the winner.
So your client gets its upfront money back, right?
He did not put up upfront money. He protested.
No. If following Chief Judge Ginsburg's question, if he had participated in the auction, he would have had to put
He
up
would have received a refund. That's correct.
So what he lost would have been what?
His right to claim the construction permit that he applied for.
Right, and the time value of that money?
Yes, but I think that, you know, it was not a large upfront payment, so the time value of the money was not substantial. But
I thought it was $50,000. Maybe you don't think that's substantial.
Well, it's just the time value of that.
I can't remember exactly what the upfront amount of money was that my client was obligated to pay.
Okay. I mean, one of the questions the commission raises up front is that you don't have standing. All right, because you just voluntarily decided to drop out of this auction.
Well, as I reviewed the case, and I did not handle it below, I came on board after the appeal was filed. This is the only, in my review of the case, this is the only way that my client could have protested what happened below.
Well, the commission says you could have participated, and then if Meredith had been granted the license to construct, you could have challenged that.
Well, we did challenge that petitions were filed against their application all along, and then ultimately their application was dismissed.
No, but isn't it correct, just procedurally, that had your client participated in the auction and Meredith had won, then you could have filed a challenge saying Meredith's application was technically ungrantable or whatever the...
We could have kept appealing, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But that would have been unavailing because, as I read the rules and cases, we could have never gotten our application reinstated. And
you would have had to refile.
We would have had to refile in a new window, and the last time an AM window was held...
Well, let me ask you, what does that mean, just so I'm clear?
The FCC periodically, you just can't...
No, but what I mean is, does that mean you pay another filing fee?
You'd file another application, but only at a specified time.
I understand the window, but there's more money involved.
Yeah,
in other words, when you file an appeal in this court, you have to pay a filing fee.
Yes.
And you have to pay it each time you file. So it's the same with the FCC, I assume.
You would only have to put up upfront money when the auction is designated. It is a possibility that you could file an application and it would be a singleton. It would not be mutually exclusive with anything else. Then you would be invited to file a long-form application, and an application filing fee would be due at that time. So there's actually two different types of fees. There's the upfront payment in the auction and then the application fee at the Form FCC 301 stage.
So your basic argument on arbitrariness here is that the system that the commission has set up allows gaming of the system to the detriment of
clients like Alvin Liu. Yes, Your Honor.
Like your clients?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that the commission's post-auction remedies, in fact, are illusory?
That's correct also, Your Honor.
Because
of this 2007 case, and I have to admit, I was counsel for one of the applicants that requested permission. It was a second place bidder. The winner defaulted, requested permission of the commission to be able to file a long form application, and that was denied.
But wouldn't there be a re-auction in that circumstance?
There would be, but
And you could participate in that, correct?
Yeah, but we have so-called cutoff protection. I mean, when we filed back in 2000, we were cut off from other applications. So it seems really unfair to subject my client to another cutoff list where other people, you know, from anywhere in the country could come in and file new applications.
Why?
Because of the way the cutoffs, I guess it's just one of those.
You know what a cutoff is, I don't.
Oh, when the commission establishes a deadline to file an application, it's called a cutoff date. And when that date comes and goes, no other members of the public can file applications. And that is to protect the work of the applicants that went out and found the frequency and did the engineering. If you allowed somebody else to come in after the fact and, you know, use this work that somebody like Alvin Liu had independently provided, it would, you know, constitute a manifest unfairness.
The footnote to which Judge Rogers was referring, I believe, is 19, in which the commission says there is, in fact, a third option. The commission's rules provide that if a winning bidder defaults or is disqualified after the close of an auction, the commission may offer the permit to the other highest bidders in descending order at their final bids. It's true the commission ordinarily re-auctions spectrum in the case of a post-auction default, such as PMCC's dismissal of its winning application, but it does not invariably do so.
I guess I would put a circle around the word may, and I'm citing a case in 2000.
Invariably as
yeah.
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So you didn't want to take that chance. But the commission looked at this in the rulemaking and basically said, pardon me, we can look at all of the applicants' qualifications ex ante. Maybe there'll be 30 of them, and they'll have to determine that they're all, or whether each of them is qualified. Or we can wait and see who wins and look at that one's qualifications. And in order to deter spurious applications, there'll be a penalty for putting in an unqualified application and winning. Right? That seems like an entirely reasonable interpretation of a statute that by itself seems to contemplate that there will be two thresholds, one for entering the auction and one for being eligible to receive the license.
Yes, my only rejoinder to that, Your Honor, respectfully, is that that reading and that procedure violates my client's rights to administrative due process. Because of the gaming aspect, coming up with just any kind of a proposal, because we basically have no remedy that advances our application and allows it to be granted at some point.
All right, so I just want to go back and ask this question again, and answer it as though you're talking to someone who is not expert in this area. When your client files an application for a license, it pays a fee, right?
In this case, in this very case, it did not.
So you just filed some pieces of paper with the commission.
That is correct.
And then the commission, after the window closed, announced there was going to be an auction. And anyone who wanted to participate in the auction had to put up upfront money.
It was a closed auction. And the auction was only designated after the Section 307B determination was made, in which case they found that Alvin Liu and Powell both were going to serve the Las Vegas metropolitan area, and they ruled out the third applicant who was proposing to serve Cheyenne, Wyoming.
You understand what I'm trying to get at? You're saying your client has been denied due process in this procedure that the commission has set up. So I'm trying to understand why. And you say no fee up front. They make a 307B determination. They announce the auction. You have to put up the upfront money. The auction is held. If you don't win, you get your money back unless your commission, your application is dismissed. And you have the opportunity to challenge the winner.
But if the commission had exercised properly its authority and its responsibility, its statutory mandate under Section 307B, it would have dismissed the Powell Meredith application and would have declared my client's application a singleton, which would have allowed it to be granted.
I understand what you're arguing, but what the commission said in its order was our rules should do this. But then when they actually promulgated the rules didn't do that. And they used 307B, and I'll ask the commission attorney about this, simply in terms of the equity among jurisdictions and communities. And that's the way they are interpreting 307B in terms of what their obligations are under this auction procedure. Not what you're describing under the comparative hearing procedure.
Well, see, Your Honor, this gets back to the Goodman-Todson line of cases where you have to have a technically implementable, if that's a word, proposal in order to get 307B consideration.
They're not doing it that way anymore.
Well, I know they're not doing that way, but our argument is they were obligated to do it that way.
Well, but your argument is, I understand your argument that all this pre-amendment procedure carries over because 307B wasn't amended, right?
That's correct.
But 307B is dripping with discretion. It says that in considering applications for licenses, the commission shall make such distribution among communities and so on as to provide a fair, efficient, and equitable distribution of radio service. That's very open-ended. They handled it one way under the comparative hearing regime. Then the statute 309J5 is adopted to deal with lotteries, right? And it says in the first sentence, no person shall be permitted to participate, ... unless such bidder submits such information and assurances as the commission may require. Very broad discretion. Right? Second sentence, no license shall be granted to an applicant selected pursuant to this subsection unless the commission determines the applicant is qualified. So qualification arises at the granting stage, and the participation is predicated only on supplying such information as the commission may require. So how can 307B still bind the commission to doing things the old way?
Because they have to make a Section 307B determination before the auction is reached.
Well, before they grant a license, that's clearly true. But why before the auction?
Well, that's what they did in this case, Your Honor. If you go back and look at the orders of April 11 and I think it's August the 15th of 2002, they made an elaborate Section 307B showing and explained why it was that the Cheyenne application was going to be dismissed and that they were going to place the two Las Vegas area applications into the auction.
Did that in any way preclude a full look after the auction?
No, but what it did preclude is my client being found as a singleton applicant, which it should have been because the Powell application clearly gamed the system. I mean, and it's arbitrary and capricious, and in our estimation, contrary to law for the commission to conclude otherwise.
So if Powell gamed the system and ultimately withdrew their application, were they subject to a penalty?
They potentially they were, but that's unavailing to my client.
No, and I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. But it's a question of whether the commission set up a rational system here. And it may be a rational system in which some people are disadvantaged by other people abusing it, and those other people get fined.
Well, it's just like the Bechtel, if I could have one more word, Your Honor, it's just like the Bechtel case where, you know, the commission had a system, we had used it for 30 years, roughly 30 years, mm-hmm. and it was unenforceable, or the commission never enforced the promises that were made by applicants who were proposing to be the 100% owner and general manager.
Right.
I mean, this is, in my mind, this is really on all fours with Bechtel.
Well, but the problem is, first of all, we don't have 30 years experience. But secondly, here, I thought Powell or Meredith, whatever we're calling it, they withdrew their application after winning or just had it dismissed. Now, didn't they have to forfeit their upfront money?
Apparently they did. I think the commission reported.
So that's the penalty.
That's the penalty. That's their penalty, yes.
That's their penalty. If you go through this and the commission finds that you submitted an application that isn't technically doable, then you may have to forfeit, and if you dismiss your application on your own motion,
you default. Yeah, that's
and correct. And you have to lose your upfront money.
That's correct.
Kind of like saying that they're suing the police department because your car was stolen and they didn't prevent it; they just recovered it, and they should have posted a policeman next to your car.
I wouldn't agree with that because my client had cutoff rights. I mean, he filed on the cutoff date a bona fide application. The Powell application, which was the only other application for the Las Vegas area on 1590, was not a bona fide application. So I would disagree with your analogy to
and
the police
facially,
department.
Facially not bona fide.
Facially.
But the Bureau looked at it
right.
Facially and said it is.
So far as we know.
Well, they didn't say anything.
They didn't, that's correct.
No, they let him participate. Yeah. They just let them participate.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm going to try to clarify some of the facts. I think may help understand the arguments that we're making. The first point goes to this question of the facial invalidity of the other Las Vegas applicant. ALM claims that its application was invalid. On its face. If I can explain how the commission looks at this, when the commission receives auction applications, it compares the technical showings of all of the applicants to determine which ones are mutually exclusive. And it looks at the face of the application, and it doesn't look beyond that. Once the commission holds an auction and it has an auction winner, it then engages in a detailed engineering examination of that application. And by doing that, it looks not just at the other applicants, but it looks at the universe of existing stations to determine if this applicant's engineering proposal is consistent with the commission's rules relating to interference to other stations. So that's the difference between facial invalidity and the commission's examination of an engineering proposal. There was nothing on the face of this application that indicated that its engineering proposal could not be granted. It required a subsequent analysis for the commission to make that determination. I'm sorry, Van.
So you're saying that the mutual exclusivity examination necessarily would not uncover any evidence?
Not at all. Because the commission is only looking at the applications that have been filed in the particular auction window. 100 applications come in. The commission puts all of this information into the computer and determines which of those applications are mutually exclusive.
All right, so it's a computer sort, and that's it, just of the applications.
That's it.
As though we were writing on a tabla rasa.
In effect, yes, yeah. With respect to the engineering qualifications.
All right. Now, just a hypothetical. Yeah. Where an applicant notifies the commission that an application prior to the auction is invalid. And let's just hypothetically suppose they have some good basis for it. The commission's procedures simply provide no forum at that stage?
That's correct. And the reason for that is the ultimate end point of the argument Alvin Liu Media is making would be to come up with a procedure that would have, in effect, a comparative hearing to determine which applicants are qualified to then be followed by an auction, which is entirely inconsistent with Congress's goal to establish a more expeditious procedure. There's no way Alvin Liu makes the point that the statute requires the commission only to permit qualified applicants to participate in the auction. This is not simply technical qualifications. It says financial qualifications, character qualifications, all sorts of allegations could be made. Some of these filing windows produce mutually exclusive groups of dozens of applicants. It takes the commission long enough as it is to deal with these auctions. If we were to add a procedure that required that permitted applicants to challenge each other's qualifications before you even got to an auction, it would be incredibly inefficient. It would be more inefficient than the prior procedure. And it's not simply the Alvin Liu says, well, this just takes a 5-minute evaluation. That's an exaggeration to begin with, but it ignores the litigation that would involve that 5-minute evaluation. The commission can't simply summarily dismiss an application on the basis of technical qualifications and have that end the matter. The applicant has appeal rights within the commission and indeed appeal rights to this court.
So if the winning bidder is disqualified after the full review, or denied, I guess, after the full review, why doesn't the commission go to number two on the list? Why does it do a re-auction?
Ordinarily, it does do a re-auction, and I think that's based on the conclusion that the commission that should open this up to other. I mean, the goal of the auction process is to get licenses to parties who value them most. Once the commission has gone through the process and it has, in essence, failed because the winning applicant is either dismissed or denied, I think the commission's judgment at that point is that the public interest is better served by simply starting over again.
That creates an unfairness to the number two, right? Because they put up the money, they met the deadlines, they did what they were supposed to. They're beat out by someone who it turned out didn't have the technical qualifications, if I'm using the right term, and then they still don't get it. It gets reopened again, and some new people get to come in without having met the original deadlines.
Well, I don't know that I would call it unfairness, Judge Kavanaugh. That's the process the commission has established. Applicants go into it knowing that this is the process. An argument could be made that it's unfair to parties who weren't interested initially but have developed an interest subsequently to permanently cut them off from this procedure. So, I mean, I think there are arguments on both sides. These are complicated procedures. They were complicated under the comparative hearing process. They're complicated with the auction process. Applicants want these frequencies. They're litigious about getting them. The commission, this is not a perfect system. The previous system wasn't perfect. The commission attempts to adopt procedures that are fair to the parties and that are efficient. And I think that's what it's done here. This idea that there's some denial of due process to Alvin Liu Media in these procedures is ridiculous. They've had all kinds of process. They've abandoned some of the process because they simply refused to participate in the auction. They had repeated appeal rights within the commission, which they invoked and they lost. They had the right to process their interest in this application through the commission, and they lost in their legal arguments, and they refused to participate in the auction, and this is where we are.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Whether I was correct when I spoke to counsel for petitioner. In the first order and report, the commission stated that we conclude our rule should incorporate a similar threshold Section 307B analysis to determine whether particular applications are eligible for auctions. And it's referencing its Allentown Broadcasting Corporation decision under the comparative hearing formulation. That sentence is, our rules should incorporate. And as I understood petitioner, he's building on that to say, therefore, you're bringing in all of the comparative hearing analysis and technical qualifications to file include this sort of technical review at the threshold. Yet the rules the commission actually promulgated don't say that. So is that what happened in this scenario?
I don't think there's any basis to argue that the commission intended to import all of its comparative hearing mm-hmm. procedures with respect to 307B into the auction process. Mm-hmm. I think quite the opposite. Let me just say, before I answer your question more directly, that 307B really has no application to the arguments that ALM is making in this case. The 307B issue arose for two reasons. One is because of the Cheyenne, Wyoming applicant, and two is because the two Las Vegas applicants, ALM and Powell Meredith, were proposing different communities of license. So the commission had to make a determination among these three applicants which community of license was preferred. The Cheyenne, Wyoming applicant lost in that because Las Vegas was preferred. ALM's application was treated as the Las Vegas application, so it was not preferred either. Now, ALM doesn't argue that it was that the commission erred in making that determination with respect to it under the 307B analysis. It doesn't say that the 307B analysis was wrong and that it should have gotten the application under 307B. The commission pointed out in its first order in this matter that the only argument ALM was making with respect to 307B was the same as its general argument that the Powell Meredith application should have been rejected on the basis of its allegedly invalid engineering showing. So if there had been no Cheyenne, Wyoming application, and if ALM and Las Vegas had and Powell Meredith had both proposed Las Vegas as their community of license, the commission wouldn't have engaged in any 307B analysis, and ALM would be making essentially the same arguments to this court that the commission should have thrown out the Powell Meredith application. So 307B really doesn't have anything to do with this proceeding. But to the extent that ALM has argued it, I will tell you what the commission has done with respect to 307B has simply determined that it's not going, unlike what it did under the comparative hearing procedures, under the auction procedures, it's going to base its 307B analysis on the certification of the applicants that they make in their initial applications to participate in the auction, that they are financially, technically, and legally qualified. And that's the qualification that it has established for making the 307B judgment. That's what it did here. Now, the result here was that one of the preferred applicants, Powell Meredith, ultimately prevailed in the auction and then withdrew its application. So Las Vegas didn't get the license under this procedure. But as we indicate in the brief, that's not the end of the matter. The commission opens a new auction window. There were new applicants, and there is an existing application, as it turned out, Powell Meredith, for another nearby community that's going to provide service to Las Vegas. And there's an application that's going to provide service to Cheyenne, Wyoming. So the goal of 307B, both as a general matter and with respect to the particular facts of this case, has not been undermined in any way by the commission's procedures for auctions.
You said earlier, Mr. Pasch, that when the commission set up the current system, it did so, this was in response to Judge Kavanaugh's question about the cutoff date, it did so because it thought this was the way to get licenses into the hands of those who valued them most highly. But as I recall from the rulemaking, the commission said there were two goals. That was one, and the other was to get licenses distributed and service begun as expeditiously as possible.
Right.
Which would suggest not starting all over when your high bidder is disqualified, but going to the second high bidder, right?
Yes. I think that's true, and I don't think that's an issue in this case, whether that procedure, which varies depending on the facts. I don't think that's an issue in this case because Alvin Liu Media could not have been a runner-up in this auction because it refused to participate in the auction. That, of course, is our basis for arguing that they lacked standing because they weren't injured by the auction.
Well, they weren't what if they have standing, then what?
Well, if they have standing, then we go to the merits, and there's no basis for either of their merits arguments, either that the statute required the commission to only allow qualified applicants to participate in the auction. As you pointed out, Judge Ginsburg, the statutory text could hardly be clearer that Congress clearly contemplated that the commission would have different standards for filing to participate in the auction and for granting an application. And as to their arbitrary and capricious argument, I think the commission amply explained when it adopted these procedures why it thought it was more in the public interest to wait until it could focus on the winning bidder to make these sorts of qualification determinations than to do this for all of the applications prior to the auction when all but one of those is not going to be a licensee.
Yeah, I guess this aspect of the objection, as we heard it today, really goes to the cutoff feature rather than to the postponement of the qualifications.
Well, can I just say in response to that, to the extent that the cutoff issue is applicable to this case, ALM's claim this morning that it could never have gotten its application reinstated, I really don't understand what Mr. Kelly was referring to, because if ALM had participated in this auction and it had lost and had challenged the auction results before this court and prevailed, the commission would have been obligated to implement the court's remand, and I don't think it could fairly have implemented the court's remand by simply opening the auction up to everybody. It would have had to unwind the proceeding to the previous state, which would have placed ALM in the position it wanted to be in or would want to be in. That is, it would.
That doesn't seem consistent with your footnote.
Well, the footnote doesn't have anything to do with judicial review. The footnote is
why would judicial review saying that it was improper to award it to that the winner was the high bidder was disqualified mean that the second high bidder has to get the license?
Well, in
your regulation?
In this case, if ALM were to prevail, and I emphasize it should not prevail, but if ALM were to prevail on the merits, it would be on the basis of the judgment that the commission should have disqualified Pal Meredith because its engineering showing was invalid, which would have meant that to go back to that point, the commission would then have before it two applications that were not mutually exclusive, the Wyoming application and Alvin Liu Media, and under those circumstances, I think clearly it would have had its cutoff protections. It would have been a singleton application. Assuming it was qualified, it would have been granted. And that's its protection if it had participated in the auction and prevailed and lost but prevailed on judicial review. There are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
I give you 2 minutes, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a couple points. I know you addressed standing, and I just wanted to make sure that I emphasized that the court in 1987 in the Orange Park, Florida TV case determined that an unsuccessful broadcast construction permit applicant had a concrete economic interest that was perceptibly damaged by the commission's award of the construction permit to someone else. So our position in this case is that the Orange Park case accords my client standing to go forward, you know, under Article 3 of the Constitution. And again, I would, as far as the three possible outcomes, again, I would refer the court to 22 FCC Record 3969, a 2007 case of the Commission's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau, for the proposition that they will not allow the second place bidder to accede to the defaulting winner's place in the auction. As to
you know, the commission did a computer study. When these applications came in back, it would have been somewhere in the 2000, 2001 timeframe, they did do a computer study of these applications to determine who was mutually exclusive with whom. And again, I would emphasize that it's strange that the Powell Meredith application could be mutually exclusive with an application 667 miles away, which is the distance between the Las Vegas area and Cheyenne, Wyoming, and would not cause destructive interference to existing stations 240 and 380 miles away, Mexicali and San Jose, respectively. So they had that information, and they could have taken it into consideration. And at the time the FCC made their Section 307B determinations in 2002, they did have information on the applicant's technical qualifications, and they could have made a finding if they chose to do so. And those are my points in rebuttal. And I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Pash, thank you. The case is submitted.